From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation around the world. I'm George Norrie and welcome to Coast AM, floating format for you tonight. Later on tonight, the astrology of Mark Lerner. And get ready for what he has to say about celestial events. Here's what's happening. Don't worry about this story. Two asteroids will pass Earth closer than the moon, and scientists say that neither threatens to strike the planet and will not be visible to the naked eye. It is an unprecedented event for astronomers, with these two asteroids just swinging past the planet at a distance closer than the moon. It's going to happen on Wednesday. The two asteroids, which will not be visible to the naked eye, were only recently discovered by astronomers in Tucson, Arizona. They are in different orbits with close passes that will come nearly 11 hours apart. Scientists say, we do not think it will threaten to strike the planet. They're pretty sure it won't. Other asteroids have been known to make such close passes, but it is very rare for two to be spotted zooming at the same time. Government scientists studying the BP disaster are reporting the best possible outcome now. Microbes are consuming the oil in the Gulf without depleting the oxygen in the water and creating dead zones where fish cannot survive. The oxygen levels in some places where the BP oil spill are down by 20%, but they say that is not low enough to create dead zones, according to the 95-page report. Now, according to the FBI, a computer-automated phone scam has impacted central and southern Illinois bank customers. Debit card customers are receiving automated telephone calls stating that their debit card account has been breached. It's a bizarre story, and they are told that they need to reset their information in order to use their accounts. Now, if you get one of these automated phone calls, don't do anything. The scam works this way. The telephone rings, the caller ID shows not available or private number. An automated recording states that your debit card account has been breached and that you need to reset your account by following these steps. And the automated recording states to press 1 to begin. So you do. Press 1. A computer system has now been activated. Then the customer is told to enter your 16-digit card number and the expiration date, which you do. Then the automated voice then asks for the 3-digit customer verification value code on the back, which you do, followed by the 4-digit PIN number, which you do. The perpetrators of the scam now have all the information they need to hit your debit card account. You get one of those calls, don't react to it. Iraq displayed hundreds of recovered artifacts that were among the country's looted heritage and spanning the ages, from a 4,000-year-old statue of a Sumerian king to a chrome-plated AK-47 bearing Saddam Hussein's image. The 542 pieces are among the most recent artifacts recovered from a heartbreaking frenzy of looting at museums and archaeological sites after the 2003 U.S.-led invasion that happened. So far, 5,000 items stolen since 2003 have been recovered. They are still searching for 15,000 pieces missing from the Iraqi National Museum. Raincoats, hair barrettes, jewelry seem harmless, right? But Consumer Reports magazine says a series of tests uncovered worrisome levels of potentially hazardous metals in such children's products currently on store shelves. In its October 2010 issue, the magazine says a metal and rhinestone hair barrette, a clover-shaped cell phone charm, and a vinyl children's raincoat contained heavy metals, cadmium, and lead levels that are too high. So just be on guard on that. A study on children has found that further evidence that chronic fatigue syndrome could be caused by a virus. They're studying that in the United Kingdom. Mobile phone users in Kenya have fallen for a hoax as well, which says receiving calls from a particular number can kill them. A text message informs users that 27 people have already died of a brain hemorrhage after picking up the calls. The Communications Commission of Kenya says it's a hoax. Last night on the program, Craig Hewlett was talking about how Osama bin Laden was not originally on the FBI's 10 most wanted list, and he was correct. I did some checking, though. He's on it now. I don't know when they put him on, but he's way up there on the top of the list. John Lennon's killer has again been denied parole in New York nearly 30 years after gunning down the ex-Beatle outside the musician's New York City apartment building. A parole board decided not to release Mark David Chapman after interviewing him by teleconference at the Attica Correctional Facility in upstate New York. It was Chapman's sixth appearance before the board since becoming eligible for parole in 2000. He will be eligible again in 2012. He is now 55 years old. You know, yesterday when Lauren Coleman was our earlier guest, we were talking about what would happen if somebody dressed up like Bigfoot. He was out there in the woods and a hunter came by and killed him. Would the hunter be convicted of anything? Would he go to jail? Lauren Coleman thought he would. I said, I don't think he would. Well, this in from a police officer. So, Jordan, I'd just like to give you my opinion about a question that came up during the program. You wanted to know if a person could be tried of a crime if he shot someone dressed in a Bigfoot suit. I've been a police officer for a little over 32 years, and in my experience, I've seen that most courts or grand juries use the reasonable doctrine. This means that what a reasonable man in a similar situation would do is the test. If, for instance, you actually believe the guy in a Bigfoot suit was an animal about to attack you, you would be justified in using deadly force because a reasonable man would do the same thing. You have no way of knowing that the Bigfoot was actually a man in a suit. I hope this helps. That's from Officer Nick. Just what I thought. Thanks, Nick. Now, what's happening with the EPA? Thinking about banning traditional lead ammo? And how does that affect you? In a moment, John Lott joins us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. The EPA will make a decision on banning traditional lead ammunition by November 1st. The ammunition that would be allowed is less useful for self-defense, and it does reduce the accuracy of guns over longer distances. This change will dramatically increase the cost of both the ammunition and many guns. John Lott is a senior research scientist at the University of Maryland and was the chief economist at the United States Sentencing Commission during 1988-89. He has received his Ph.D. in economics from UCLA and has published hundreds of articles in academic journals. He is the author of various books, including The Bias Against Guns, More Guns, Less Crime, and Freedomomics. Here's John Lott for 2 hours on Coast to Coast AM. John, welcome back, my friend. How are you?
Oh, great to talk to you.
Hey, this story, let's start with this one, the EPA wanting to ban traditional lead ammunition. Why are they doing this? Are they considering this to be an environmental hazard?
Well, actually, they've just decided not to go through with this, but they had, for a couple weeks, had started to collect comments, were moving forward on it. I think the election's coming up, something happened in the Obama administration for them to change course, at least for now. But the claim was some gun groups had essentially put together a request to the EPA that there was going to be environmental damage from this. It was an issue that was originally taken up about 10 years ago under the Clinton administration. But even at that time, the scientists at the EPA had found that there was really no environmental harm from the type of lead that is used in bullets. And as you say, this getting rid of lead in bullets would create not only double the price of ammunition, but more importantly, it has real safety problems and real problems for using guns. There's a reason why they use lead. Having a heavy metal there actually creates a lot more force, creates more stopping power for the bullet. So if you're a 120-pound woman and being attacked by a 200-pound man, you care about being able to stop the individual that's attacking you. Plus, if it doesn't have much mass, the bullet doesn't travel as much in a straight line as it would if it was lighter. Wind, other things can cause it to deviate. It's very hard to hit targets that may be more than 25 feet or so away from you.
One of the things the EPA said, John, in delaying this action was that they're taking on major issues of lead to minimize children's exposure. But with the group that was petitioning to get this ban, get the ammunition the lead banned from ammunition, that they felt it would affect wildlife, and the EPA said, basically said, we don't have the right to control this. So do you think this group will try to find a different agency and try to go after it that way?
Well, I think they may wait until farther on down the line when there's not an election that's imminent, or maybe towards the end of Obama's administration, and they may try to bring it up again at that point.
Well, it's very interesting that everybody seems to go after guns, and then as they get close to an election, they pull back for a little bit until the election, as you said, and then they go at it again.
Right. I mean, there's been, you know, on the environmental issues that we're just raising, there's been research by the Centers for Disease Control. There's been other research that's been done by the Wildlife Service, and as well as the EPA science that I mentioned from 10 years ago. And whether it's harm, potential harms to humans or to animals, they keep on finding that it's not. There's no significant evidence of any harm.
What's the latest with the courts and guns? Anything?
Well, I mean, there's a number of cases that have been filed after Chicago enacted its new gun laws. I mean, they recognize to some extent that you have a right to defend yourself, but only in your house. You can't do it in your garage. You can't do it on your porch, even if it's an enclosed porch. If you own a house and a business, you can only keep the gun in your home. You're not allowed to have a handgun in your business for self-defense. So there's lots of issues there that courts are going to have to address. I mean, if there's a fundamental right to self-defense, why doesn't it extend to somebody's garage? If I have two homes, why am I only allowed to have one operational gun? I mean, if people are really being threatened, it doesn't hurt necessarily to have even more than one gun in your home. You may not be able to get instant access to a gun if it's upstairs and some criminal breaks in downstairs. And so, they basically have tried to draw the line as finely as they can, where they want to see where they can get away with things. And they hope maybe the Supreme Court composition will change. We've seen the nominees for Sotomayor and Kagan, and we pretty much know where they stand on these things. And one more judge could make a big difference. Or even if you can win a case that says a complete ban is unconstitutional, if Chicago puts large fees that you have to pay in order to register your guns and to go through the training, it's quite possible that you don't have five votes that will say, well, a couple $100 in fees, that's not too much, that's okay. And so they want to try to push, because if they can find where the courts will draw the line, then next time they can go a little bit further.
That's right.
If the court approves a couple $100 in fees, then they'll increase it to $500, and they'll go through the process again.
John, is the United States one of the last bastions of gun ownership? I mean, how many countries out there allow guns now?
Well, we're not the last, but obviously it's getting more restrictive over time. And the United Nations is pushing forward with the Obama administration's help with a small arms treaty, which would regulate guns more. There's a real risk that there'd be things in there such as registration and licensing of guns. But there are countries that have higher gun ownership rates than we have here in the United States. Switzerland probably has a gun ownership rate that's over 20 percentage points higher than what we have here in the United States. Israel also has one of the highest gun possession rates in the world. And there are other countries that have gun ownership rates which are similar to ours. You have Finland, for example, has a fairly high gun ownership rate. So we're not alone. But there's pushes. You have George Soros. It's been a big issue for him around the world. He's tried to pass gun ban initiatives in countries like Brazil and other countries. He funds research and studies in Switzerland to try to get them to change their gun laws. And, gradually over time, they've been having an effect. And, I think it's something that makes Americans and Swiss and others that do allow this different, because if individuals are able to go and defend themselves, I think they feel a little bit confidence than they do if they have to completely depend upon the government. And my research shows me that the police are probably the most important thing for reducing crime, but the police themselves understand that they simply can't bear that entire burden for protecting people, that they arrive on the crime scene after the crime's been committed. And you have a real question there about what you advise people to do when they're having to defend themselves by themselves. And that's one reason why I think surveys show the vast majority of rank and file police officers support individual law-abiding citizens being able to protect themselves.
Yep, and they always did. Why does someone like the billionaire George Soros want to control guns? I mean, what's at it for him here?
You know, he has, I guess, lots of left-wing views on lots of different issues. And, you know, I'm not in his psyche. I don't know. I could just say that if you look at surveys of self-identified liberals and conservatives, it started to change a little bit. But in the past, the one issue that's most distinguished them has been their issues on gun control, not taxes, not even abortion. Whether they trust letting law-abiding citizens own guns or not, and possibly Soros comes at it from that direction. He just thinks that only certain approved people should be able to go and get guns. You have lots of people. You have Daley, who ironically just announced his retirement today.
Yeah, he's not going to run for re-election. Yeah.
Right, and others, they don't trust others with guns, even though they have guns for self-protection themselves, and I assume...
And security and everything else.
That's right. But, you know, there's one other gun issue I wanted to bring up, and that is it's been well below the radar, but South Korea has tried to export back to the United States various M1 Garands and carbines that were given to them over 50 years ago. And the Obama administration has denied their ability to sell those guns to collectors. You have guns that are over 50 years old. They're semi-automatic rifles. And the Obama administration has apparently said that they cannot be sold in the United States because there's a risk of accidental gun deaths that could occur from the guns. You know, if they really believe that as a type of argument, they could use that to go and say no gun sales should be allowed because there's always the possibility that an accidental gun death would occur. But I suppose the irony in this case is that these same guns are used by the Civilian Marksmanship Program in the United States that, for kids that have been using these guns to train at camps and others, there hasn't been one safety problem or accident that's occurred any place in the United States in the last 7 years. So it's a little strange, and possibly the Obama administration will go and revisit the Civilian Marksmanship Program, given their belief about the risks of these guns. But, you know, this is something that we saw happen during the Clinton administration, where they also banned the importation of many types of guns. The Bush administration reversed that. It seems like we're starting to move back towards that.
So it's definitely a political football, isn't it?
It certainly is.
And it goes and goes and goes. John, you also, of course, are a noted researcher into economics. And I want to talk with you about that when we come back in just a moment. I don't know. What do you think Christmas is going to be like this year at the retail level?
Well, I think it'll probably be a little bit better than last year, but I think it's still going to be down. I think the rest of this year we're going to have very slow growth. You know, if you look at the last quarter of last year, the economy was growing at an annual rate of about 5.7%. In the first quarter of this year, it was down to 3.3%.
Mm-hmm.
In the second quarter, it was down to 1.6%. And I think with all the chaos that's been created with the different stimulus programs that we have here, right, and the concerns about the different regulations that are being imposed, I think the economy will continue to grow, but at a very slow rate.
Well, we're going to get your take on the stimulus program and get your views on whether you think they worked at all. We'll be back in a moment with John Lott on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, We'll take phone calls with John Lott. We'll be right back. We're going to take phone calls next hour with John Lott. Later on in the program, astrologer Mark Lerner joins us as well. Now I have this to report. Long time ago, Coast to Coast guest. He was on with Art Bell. Wendell Stevens, Lieutenant Colonel, has died at the age of 87. He was a UFO researcher and a pioneer. He died in his home in Tucson, Arizona, of respiratory failure. He was in a wheelchair on oxygen. His mind was always there. And he has passed on. They thought he had more time. He did not. Wendell Stevens, dead at the age of 87. And also a couple emails in. Osama bin Laden is on the FBI's 10 most wanted list, but for murders of U.S. nationals outside of the United States. Apparently, he has not been on the list for anything that had to do with 9/11. So that's still a very perplexing story, isn't it? Why isn't he? Anyway, we'll be back in a moment with John Lott on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We're with John Lott. John, let's talk about the stimulus, the economy, if we can, for the next half hour. Then we'll take calls with you next hour as well. In your opinion, did it work at all, pumping all these billions of dollars into the economy?
Well, I think that's actually increased the unemployment rate. And the reason is pretty simple, and that is but a lot of people think the government goes and creates wealth just by spending money. Really, all it does is it just changes where you and I would have spent the money to where it thinks it ought to go. You know, whether it gets the money in taxes or borrowing, it's taking money from one place and moving it someplace else. Well, the businesses that you and I would have spent our money on, they're losing, other ones are gaining. And in transferring the money, you also transfer jobs. I mean, the businesses that you and I would have been giving our money to now don't have it. They're not going to employ as many people. They're not going to produce the products that they were before. But it takes a while for people to move from one set of jobs to another. And in many cases, they have to take large pay cuts. If I'm working, let's say, in the coal mines or in the oil industry, and now I'm supposed to work in something to do with solar panels, you know, I may not have that set of skills. And it's hard for lots of people to adjust to the fact that they may have to take big reductions in salary. And so they look for long periods of time. Not everybody moves quickly from one job to another. And so we've just created a lot of chaos here. You know, there have been rules that they've changed on trade, which have benefited certain companies and hurt others. Jobs move between those. When they go and they pass something like the financial reform, banks have to cut out certain operations that they did, and maybe other parts of Wall Street are going to expand their operations. You know, Citibank lobbied for that legislation. Goldman Sachs lobbied for that legislation. Mm-hmm. Other banks fought against it, and so jobs move there. You look at the healthcare stuff. Already the impact of that is moving jobs around. And so you have all these changes that have just created a lot of chaos, and it takes a while for the economy to adjust. And I think that's one reason why we've had this big increase in unemployment, much bigger than a lot of the projections were about what it was going to be. And I had written about this back at the beginning of last year, that these types of things would happen. There's one other thing that's happened, too, and that is we've had this huge increase in the length of unemployment insurance benefits. You know, historically, if you look from the end of World War II up until the summer of 2008, unemployment insurance benefits would last from any place from as low as 21 weeks to up to 30 weeks. Right now, you can get benefits for 95 to 99 weeks, depending upon what type of state you're in. That's almost four times the average that we had in all the previous years from World War II on. And economists have found certain things. One thing is, if you subsidize more of something, you'll get more of it. Now, I'm not trying to minimize or belittle people's situation here, but there's some people that when you give them more benefits and benefits for a longer period of time,
they'll take
They'll take longer to search.
And sure.
we, We've seen this before with the
and then they scramble. Reform. Then they scramble when it runs out for them.
That's exactly right. What economists have found is that about 40% of the people who get unemployment insurance benefits get jobs in the last month of their benefits. And when you extend the benefits, that kind of bulge just moves right along with the extension of the benefits. And and then there's another 30% that get jobs in within the 3 weeks after their benefits end.
What's going on in the housing market, John?
Well, the housing market's been a real mess, and I think the Obama administration, many of the things that they've done have exacerbated it. We've had new rules on lending. You know, one of the problems that created this mess to begin with is that the federal government forced banks to make loans that they didn't want to make.
Right.
So you had people who couldn't put anything down for their home, or people whose only income was, let's say, welfare or unemployment insurance. And banks would say, these guys are really risky. We don't want to lend to them. And the federal government would say, if you don't lend to them, that can be taken as evidence of discrimination, and you can face huge penalties as a result. And so banks made loans. Now, we've kind of gone to the other extreme. Now, there are many cases where banks want to loan to people, but the federal government has changed many rules that made it so that now those people that they want to lend to, they're not allowed to. And so that's helped exacerbate the drop in housing prices that we've had. But, you know, just today, or Tuesday, we've just had a new bailout for mortgages. And it's really, I don't know, depressing.
And what is the new bailout plan?
Well, what it is if your mortgage is underwater, which basically means that the value of your mortgage is more than the value of your house, then so you owe more on your house than the house is worth, then if the holder of the mortgage, the financial institution that has it, goes to the Treasury, what they can do is, in exchange for a 10% reduction in what's owed on the mortgage, the federal government will guarantee the other 90% of the mortgage. But here's the problem, and that is, if a mortgage is underwater, there's obviously a lot of risk for it. These mortgages are worth less than the face value of the mortgage. And on average, you find a lot of these mortgages have already been selling at like 40 or 50% of their original value.
Sounds like we're going to get right back into the mess we started in.
Well, it's even a little bit worse, because what we have here is that we're just giving Wall Street money. So let's say you had a $400,000 mortgage, but let's
say the house is worth $250,000.
All right.
All right, so what do you do?
And so if the house was worth that, my guess is most likely the value of the mortgage, because they buy and sell these mortgages all the time, would be something like $200,000 or less, because there's a cost for buying and selling the home if somebody defaults. And if the mortgage is worth more than the value of the home, a lot of people just walk away from the house.
Right.
And so now you're the bank, and the government says, if you take a 10% cut on this $400,000, because you know it's not even worth $400,000, so it's nothing to you to say, I agree, I'll give up 10%.
And get the rest guaranteed, yeah.
I get the rest guaranteed. I paid $200,000 for this mortgage. The government guarantees 90% of the $400,000. That's $360,000. That's as if the government just wrote you a check for $160,000. And it doesn't affect future mortgages. This is a past business decision.
Gosh, you would hope, if you're in that position, that the borrower would default so you can get that extra money from the government.
Right. Well, the thing is, as soon as the government makes this offer, the value of the mortgage goes up right away. You don't need to wait for it to go there. Just the fact that they know in the future the government will pay off. And the thing is, Obama administration has done this on the cheap. They're not paying anything right now, so we don't see the cost.
Yeah, but who's thinking of this stuff, though? I mean, surely they've got to have economists back there. And CPAs and people who know financial stuff, they got to be putting this stuff together. What's wrong with them?
Well, I know some of the economists that work in the Obama administration, and my understanding is they've objected to a lot of these things. But there's lots of political decisions that have gone on here. Look, so much of this is just to create transfers, I believe, to favored groups. And so, you know, when certain businesses are not allowed to do certain operations and others get it, there's a lot of lobbying that goes on. Just look at this small business stimulus or jobs bill that the president's pushing this week and he's going to be talking about tomorrow. There's all sorts of companies that gain and lose. I mean, he talks about a tax cut, but the devil's in the details. It's not just cutting the rates, they're raising the marginal rates, but then you get all sorts of deductions if you do what the government wants. So, for example, if you're a farmer and you build a building that only does one operation, you get a 50% write-off on the building. But if it does more than one operation, you get nothing. You go through these things. If you go, if you're a small business and you go to the Export-Import Bank, if you do sell certain types of products, you'll get subsidized loans for selling it. But if you sell other types of products, you'll get nothing. And essentially what's happened is they've had lobbyists go in massive numbers. And so on the farm example, basically the farmers that gain the most from this are large farms. And there's certain people that build certain types of facilities that have gone in there and they've gotten advantages relative to their competitors that sell other types of buildings. And so, you know, this is, it's just a mess. I mean, I don't think most Americans realize just the huge transfers that are occurring between different groups based upon how politically favored they are.
Is anybody going to be able to fix this?
Well,
I don't see anybody out there with a plan. I don't care what party you're from or who you're from. I don't see anybody with a fix.
Right. I mean, so much of the stimulus, we go, you know, whether it's green energy or other things, there's a reason why these things were not getting investments to begin with, because the return wasn't there, or private money would have funded them. And what's going to happen in a couple of years when these government funds run out, they're going to start losing money on these things. And there's going to be a lot of political pressure to keep up and keep on providing these subsidies that these operations, which really only got started because of the subsidies to begin with, they're going to want the subsidies to keep on going. So this is, it's going to be hard in many ways to go and get rid of this, because you're creating political constituencies out there who only do many of the things that they do because of the subsidies. So if I have approved businesses that get certain loans because they produce the types of products that the Obama administration thinks ought to be produced, well, when those subsidies end, they're going to find a drop in demand.
Sure. Like the cash for clunkers. I mean, car sales have slowed down again.
Exactly. And so what that did was that moved sales that would have taken place a few months later up to the future. And we saw a big drop there after the subsidies. Right now, sales are quite a bit below what they were last year in the automobile industry. And, you know, it's just...
And wait till they start running against the numbers from the cash for clunkers. They're going to be way down, aren't they?
Right. Well, I mean, you know, these are just really costly ways to go and try to temporarily create jobs in certain areas. And, you know, tomorrow Obama's, well, this week, if you just add up all the proposals that he's coming out with, came out with on Monday and coming out with tomorrow, you're talking well over $200 billion in new stimulus packages that he wants to have passed. You know,
where's that money coming from, John?
Well, it's coming from you and me. One of the things,
we don't have any more to give.
Right. No, I couldn't agree with you more. The one thing that didn't get a lot of notice, in July, the IMF came out with a report. They do this on all the developed nations and many underdeveloped nations in terms of what's their fiscal situation right now. And one of the things they did was, they try to do the accounting more like a business. You know, not completely, but at least they move in that direction a lot. Because when we talk about the deficit that we focus on right now, we've had $1.3+ trillion deficit during the two fiscal years under the Obama administration. It's in many ways much worse than that, because we are making promises for future payouts. There's something called the fiscal gap, which is the difference between what the law says the government is promising to pay out in the future versus what the current law says in terms of revenue. A country like Greece, for example, has a fiscal gap of 10%, which basically means from now, forever in the future, they're basically scheduled to spend 10% more of their GDP than they're getting in revenue. For the United States, if you believe the International Monetary Fund numbers, it's worse. Our fiscal gap is 14%. So right now, our government, our federal government, is spending a little bit over 25% of GDP. We would have to cut, in order to balance the books, we would have to cut government spending from 25% to 11%, the federal government spending, or taxes right now are about 14% of GDP. We'd have to double those, and they have to be doubled forever. And it's just not the income tax doubling, because that would only do part of it, but doubling all taxes. And it's a real problem. And each year we don't deal with this problem, it gets worse. So, you know, for the next 10 years, we basically have Obama promising us $1 trillion deficit, as far as I can see. And that's with his assumptions. Because if you go through the numbers that they have there, there's so many optimistic numbers that they have there. It's already been pretty obvious that the claims that they were making for the healthcare changes, saving costs, it's raising costs for businesses. It's dramatically going to increase the cost for government. We were promised it was going to reduce the deficit by $149 billion over 10 years. Already, just the changes that the administration has admitted to indicates that it's going to increase the deficit by about $200 billion. And they haven't even gone, and that's just what they have said. All this has come out since the vote on this. But we had to rush it through before all these changes could be examined.
I got to ask you this, Mike, because I'm curious. I haven't heard you mention once yet in calling him the president. You just mentioned him by last name. I find that interesting. How come?
Well, I don't know. In my writings, I mentioned President Obama at the beginning of each piece. I make sure to do that. I guess I'm just speaking informally right now.
All right.
But, if you look at any of the pieces that I have, whenever I mention him, the first time I mention him, I always mention, call him President Obama.
That's true. You do. You do. You haven't tonight, but you do in your articles.
I mean, right now, I guess I'm just upset.
You are upset. I can tell. Well, you know, his support has waned. You know that. It's plummeted. You knew him from your days in Chicago.
Right.
And, you know, he came in with a mandate that could have been one of the best we've seen in a long time, and it's gone. And I don't see anything in the next year and a half that's going to change that. I mean, it seems like just everything that this administration has sadly touched has fallen apart.
Yeah. Well, it's...
I don't think the Bush administration did anything any better either.
Oh, look, I have plenty of problems to complain about with the Bush administration at the end there. You know, the bailouts I was strongly against to begin with. There's another bailout package as part of the small business.
It was one of those bad handoffs, John. I mean, from the two wars to the economy, I mean, the whole thing has been a mess all the way. And we'll be back in a moment. We'll take your phone calls with John Lott on Coast to Coast AM.